Okay, Trevor, so let's begin. We are in Masechta Sukkah on Chavav Beis. If you remember, we had this very exciting story that they bring some food to Reb Tzaddik. He eats less than a kibbutz. He does not wash his hands. He takes it in a mappa, etc. And he does not eat it in the sukkah, acharav, and he does not make a bracha afterwards. Right, Reb Tzadok felt that you only make a bracha achrona if you have the size of a kibbutz. He holds like the Tanna Reb Yehuda there in Maseches Brachos, that bracha achrona is only when you have a kibbutz. The Mishnah says he did not make a bracha achrona, but that implies that Reb Tzadok did make a bracha rishona. Right? And what we spoke about last time is that this seems to show that there's a different rationale, there's a different lumdus for bracha rishona than there is for bracha achrona. Bracha rishona, the way we presented it, is a halacha in hana'a. You're not allowed to get benefit from the world without a bracha. Any tiny morsel of food that I have is some sort of benefit. So bracha rishona, you make on any tiny amount. Bracha achrona, however, requires a shiur, requires a specific amount. That's what we're going to be discussing tonight, the shiur precisely for a bracha achrona. And that's probably because bracha achrona requires achila. You have to eat. Bracha achrona is modeled after benching, right? Benching is the paradigmatic. Birkas HaMazon is a paradigmatic bracha achrona. By Birkas HaMazon, the Torah says, that you need achila. So therefore, all bracha achronos require achila. There's just a machlokas as to what exactly constitutes achila. Is a kezayis achila? That's the Tanna Reb Meir. The Tanna Reb Yehuda, however, is that, no, you only make a bracha achrona when you have a kibbutz. And that is probably, I probably didn't phrase it 100% correctly a minute ago. That's probably because, according to the Tanna Reb Yehuda, v'ochalta v'sovata means that you need achila which satisfies you, and that's the size of a kibbutz, that's the size of an egg. So, just to review what we're up to, Reb Tzadok did not make a bracha achrona because he did not have a kibbutz, but he did make a bracha rishona. Because the bracha rishon is recited on any tiny amount. That's what Rashi says in our Mishnah. And then we have this massive Tosis I want to go through with you a little bit tonight. Did any of you have a chance to get through this Tosis? Zoe did. See, Zoe is out in the wilderness of British Columbia, and she had time to learn. Tova, you got through the Tosis a little bit, or? I still can't hear you. You're not muted, but I can't hear you. So I'm not exactly sure what that means.
Now, can
Yes,
you
now I can hear you. Yes.
hear me? Jasmine and I got through most of it, but we didn't quite finish it.
Okay. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to try to go through this Tosfos. To get through Tosfos is a lot of work. Some of it might be less than fully exciting, but it's worth doing it because it's important. So let's get to work. V'lo birech acharav. Reb Tzadik did not make a bracha achrona. Zog Taisvis. Savala ki Reb Yehuda de perek shlosha sha'achlu. De darash v'achalta v'savata ube rachta. Achila sheesh basviya dehainu kibbutz. Right, this is what we just explained. That Reb Tzadik calls like Reb Yehuda, who learns v'achalta v'savata, meaning you need achila that fills you up, which means a kibbutz. Rabbi Meir Polig, the Amar de Mevarchim b'Kizayis. Rabbi Meir disagrees and he says that you make a bracha achrona with a Kizayis. V'nir'e halacha kivasei. Right, so Tosa says we paskin like Rabbi Meir against Rabbi Yehuda. Right, so the first point that Tosa is suggesting, and to the best of my knowledge, no one disagrees with this. The point is that we paskin like Rabbi Meir, which means that you need A kazayis make a bracha. Is that Tanya? Is that your hand up? Oh no, that's me. That's my cursor. Okay.
sorry.
No, that was my cursor. It looked like a hand. So no need to apologize. Okay. So what's Tysus's proof that we paskin like Rabbi Meir? V'nira halacha tavaseh mida aminon in parakeitz mevarchim. Amr Rabbi Chiya bar Abba anira isis Rabbi Yochanan she'achal zayis moliach. But that is the Gemara that's going to lead us to a whole lengthy discussion. Basically, Reb Chiya bar Abba says that once upon a time, I saw Reb Yochanan ate a olive, and he made a bracha tchila v'sof. He made a bracha rishona and a bracha achrona. So you see, he ate an olive. An olive is the size of a kezayis, right? Everyone agree with that? An olive is the size of a kezayis. So he made a bracha achrona on a kezayis. That's what the Gemara says, and that proves that we paskin like Remeir. Va'od. Va'od aminam perek shlosh sha'achlu. Am Reb Chiya bar Abba, am Reb Yochanan. La'olam einu moti rabim yidei chovasan ad sheyochal kezayis dogon. A second proof is that the Gemara says that you cannot be motzi the rabbin unless you eat a kezayis of grain. That means zimun. Zimun really means that you are being motzi other people in birkas hamazon. So you need to eat a kezayis of grain to be motzi people of birkas hamazon. That means you bench when you have a kezayis. That's the basic idea that Tosis is getting at. V'chein am Rav Huna bar Yehuda mishmei derav. Right, that Gemara in pardon me, that Gemara daf mem ches and brachos also teaches me that you make a bracha achrona on the kezayis. So we have two sources. We have the Reb Yochanan story that he ate a zayis and he made a bracha achrona, and we also have this idea that by benching you need a kezayis to be motzi other people. That's what we see in the Gemara. However, umitoch hayirushalmi mashma debibriya lo beinon kezayis. Tosa says that you get indication from a Yerushalmi that if you eat a bria, if you eat a full item on its own, then you do not need a kezayis. Afilu preda achas shal einav or preda achas shal rimon to una bracha lefaneha ulaachareha. You get an impression from the Yerushalmi that even if you have just one little, I think last time also we got stuck. How do we translate preda? It's like a section. Even if you have a section of a pomegranate or a section of a grape, you make a bracha achrona. Now, a grape can be like a very small grape, like a champagne grape, smaller than a kezayis, no? A section of a pomegranate here does not mean like a full section of, like, you know, you have a pomegranate that they have like all the white stuff and lots of red seeds in between. My understanding is that preda achas sharimon means one pomegranate seed. A pomegranate seed is smaller than a kezayis. And the Yerushalmi gives an indication that you make a bracha achrona even if you have one little drop of, or one small piece of a pomegranate. So now let's quote this Yerushalmi. This is what the Yerushalmi says. Reb Yochanan nasar zesa ubeirech lufonav ula acharav. Right? A very exciting story. Reb Yochanan takes an olive and he made a bracha. Okay? That's the story. He made a bracha before he ate the olive and he made a bracha after he ate the olive. V'hava Reb Chiya bar Abba mistakobe. And Reb Chiya bar Abba is like looking at him. And he's saying, V'amar lei Reb Yochanan, Bavla, ma'at mistakobe. Right? So Reb Chiya bar Abba is like staring at him. And Reb Yochanan says, hey, Babylonian, what are you staring at me? Right? Remember, Reb Yochanan is from Eretz Yisrael. Reb Yochanan is an Amora from Eretz Yisrael. Right? Reb Yochanan is one of the authors of the Talmud Yerushalmi. So Reb Yochanan turns to Reb Chiya bar Abba and he says, hey, Babylonian dude, why are you staring at me? Les lach kosho mi min shiva ton bracha lefonav ula acharav. You do not hold that any one of the Shivas Haminim requires a bracha beforehand and afterwards. Let's take a step back. There is a din that we make a bracha achrona when we eat food that is not from the Shivas Haminim. No? If I eat, let's say, vegetables, I'll have carrots, I'll make a bracha achrona called Berei Nefashos. That bracha, however, of Berei Nefashos is a later invention of Chazal. So much so that the Mishnah in Brachos on Mem He says that if you eat other foods besides the Shivas Haminim, you don't make any bracha. The tradition was that they called Berei Nefashos not making any bracha. So Reb Yochanan turns to Reb Chiya Bar Abba and he says, what are you staring at me? Right? I made a bracha achrona after eating a pomegranate. What, you don't hold that Shivas Haminim gets a bracha achrona? Of course it gets a bracha achrona, right? You make a al ha'etz. So that's what Reb Yochanan says. Hey, Reb Chiya Bar Abba, why are you staring at me? So my answer is, the Yerushalmi answer is, Islay. No, he does hold of that. Umatzri chalei, mipnei, meaning to say, oh, so Tanya asks, isn't Reb Chiya a Amora from Bavel? An Amora from Eretz Yisrael. That's your question, Tanya? So I think the issue is, this fellow is Reb Chiya Bar Abba. The Reb Chiya who's from Eretz Yisrael is like Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, who are the authors of the Tosefta. But this is Reb Chiya Bar Abba, who I think is a different person. You probably know more about this than I do.
Okay, I don't know. Thank you. I thought he was Eretz Yisrael, but and then Bavlai then would just be like a pejorative, even if he's Eretz Yisrael. I don't know.
In other words, it's like even though he's from Eretz Yisrael, he insults him by calling him a Babylonian. I don't know. I'm under the impression that there is a Reb Chiya from Eretz Yisrael. That's Reb Chiya, the author of the Tosefta. But the Reb Chiya there in the Yerushalmi is Reb Chiya Bar Abba, who's a different person. And that's
a side point. Okay. But sorry.
That's my understanding. Again, I might be totally off base, but basically we have like this interesting conversation. This is kind of, it's an interesting Yerushalmi because you can get like a feel for the personalities over here, no? Like Reb Chiya Bar Abba is staring at him. So Reb Yochanan's like, hey, why are you staring at me? You know, and like, so he says, oh, you don't make a bracha? So no. So Reb Chiya Bar Abba says, no, you do make a bracha, but I'm staring at you because what? Because the garinaso mima ataso. Because the seed makes it smaller. Or the garin is, yeah, it's like the pit, no? The pit makes it smaller, so you don't have the full size of a kezias. Because the pit made it smaller. So then the Gemara asks back to Reb Yochanan, blessed Reb Yochanan Shigari Naso Ma'ataso. But Reb Yochanan doesn't tell that the pit made it smaller. Ma'abele Reb Yochanan Mishum Briya. What's Reb Yochanan saying? So Reb Yochanan is saying based on Briya, meaning the Yerushalmi is telling me that according to Reb Yochanan, I make the bracha acharona on one tiny bit of olive or of one little bit of olive, because it's a bria. It is a full creature on its own. That's the din that Rabbi Yochanan is teaching.
Can I ask a question about bria?
Yes, please.
So we're saying it's not that it's intact. I don't know why I was thinking it was that it was something that was intact.
So I think we're going to have to discuss that. It might have to be intact.
Okay. I hold my question.
Right. The issue basically is that Reb Yochanan is eating an olive and he is saying it's a bria. Now, Reb Chiya Bar Abba could hold one of two things. He could deny the concept of bria, or he could say that bria does not apply in this case. You see, Zoe is raising an issue that we're going to talk about in a few minutes, which is when Reb Yochanan ate this olive, did he also eat the pit of the olive? I think last time we pointed out one of the great mysteries in life, that people eat cherry pits, but they don't eat olive pits, no? It's like a great mystery. I'm not exactly sure why this is, but I think it's a universal practice. Now, the basic idea is that the Yerushalmi that Taisus is quoting, the Yerushalmi says that there's a halacha called Bria, and therefore this halacha of Bria is why Rabbi Yochanan is making a bracha achrona. And then the Yerushalmi continues, Milsid Reb Yochanan Amara, Shekein Afil, Prey the Achas Shal Enav, or Prey the Achas Shal Rimon, Shehi Teuna, Bracha, Lefanav, Ula Acharav. Right? Reb Yochanan's statement is saying that even one bit of a grape, one grape, or one pomegranate seed gets a bracha beforehand and after. So there is a Yerushalmi that has the concept of Bria. Now, if you read the Tosis precisely earlier, Tosis does not say that Yerushalmi says a Bria gets a bracha achrona. Tosis says that there's indication from the Yerushalmi. Mitocha Yerushalmi mashma. I think what Tosis is getting at is that, yeah, maybe Reb Yochanan says this, but Reb Chiya Bar Abba disagrees, perhaps, and therefore there's no real proof that a Bria gets a bracha, because who says I pass like Reb Yochanan? That's the way I'm reading the Tosfos. That's the word mashma. Oh. Uba hashash shalanu. In our Gemara, yesh ke'en masazeh b'perek keita mevarchim. Right? Our Gemara has a story very similar in the sixth paragraph of Brachas. Right? It's a pretty similar story that Reb Chiya Bar Abba says, I saw Reb Yochanan who ate a salty olive, and he made a bracha beforehand and afterwards. He made a bracha achron and a salty olive. So the Gemara says, Reb Yirmiyah asks, one second, how did Reb Yochanan make a bracha on the olive? When you take out the pit, so it doesn't have the shear of a kezias. No, a kezias is the size of an olive. An olive without a pit is not the size of an olive. Right, this is profound. So that's the Gemara's kasha. Amar le, mi savret kezias gadol be'inon, beinoni be'inon. Vahi zayis to also lekame Reb Yochanan zayis godo hevon. Right, the olive, the halacha of a kezayis is a medium-sized olive. In that book that Zoe sent around on the Shiur chat, the Rabbi Bodner Brook halachos of kezayis. So he points out, I believe that there are seven different sizes of olives in the United States. They range from tiny to super gargantuan. The medium size olive is called extra large. This is a standard American thing, no? That everything is inflated. If you read that Rabbi Bodner book, I'm pretty sure the medium sized olive, that's the size of kezias, a medium sized olive. By the way, you can't figure out what a medium sized olive is just by buying a jar of olives. And Shiurim are much smaller in Canada. Okay, there you have it. You cannot figure out the size of a medium-sized olive by buying a jar of olives and measuring each of them, because the jars of olives that I buy are one grade of olive. And there's a lot of types of olives that they only use in industry and olive oil making and stuff like that, right? That don't come to market. They don't end up in our jars of olives. But the Gemara is saying, this is the Talmud Bavli, we have the question, how did Reb Yochanan make a bracha acharona on the olive? Once you take out the pit, so the olive is smaller than a kezias. So the Gemara says, no. You think that Reb Yochanan had a medium-sized olive and then he took out the pit? No, he had a big olive. And a big olive without a pit is the size of a medium olive. Hey, this, ladies, is advanced mathematics, right? The math of olives. Now,
All right, can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
I'm back in Canada. I start with my sorries again. Is it significant that it's salted? Because wouldn't salting shrink it?
Yeah, so let's talk about...
Salt is how you preserve it so you can eat it, right? Because you cannot really eat it raw. I thought that's why they said that.
I mean, I think it's for preserving it, but I think if you salt something, usually why you're preserving it is because you're extracting liquid, so that would like logically shrink it.
So that that's an interesting question. I don't know. My guess would be that if it's a real kazayas, if I have like the exact kazayas and then it just shrivels up, it still is a kazayas, right? Because all the material is there, just got harder. I think it's based on volume, not based, right? If it shrivels, does it lose its volume? Okay, I might be saying really stupid things now. It loses volume, right, Dr. Tanner? Or wait,
I mean, if it shrinks, it loses water, right? It loses, right. So that does contribute to the volume, but you have all the pulp. I hear what you're saying, that it keeps its kind of essence. I guess it just loses, like a dehydrated, tomato.
I was just looking around before in the halachos of Bria, which is part of our topic. So the Achronim discuss, is a raisin considered a Bria? A raisin is a grape, right? A grape, one grape is, even if it's less than a kezayis, you'll make a brech achron according to this version in the Yerushalmi. What about a raisin? Right? Is a raisin considered a bria? Or did I say like it's all shriveled and yucky? So maybe it's not a bria. So the achronim will say, the quote from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that it still is a bria. In terms of the salty olive, I think Zoe's question is an interesting question, that maybe because it's salted, it lost some of its size. That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
I'm just curious why they like made a point of it.
That's a zayas maliach?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the point is that olives which are not salted are really bitter and no one would eat them. Okay. But the Gemara says that the Yona that went out from Noach's Teva, so it found a ale zayas taraf befiha, it found a an olive leaf. So the Yona says, according to Chazal, that yiyum izonosai merurim kezayis bidei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I'd rather that my food is all bitter like an olive. Well, bitter like an olive, I think, means that a plain olive, if it's not salted, is actually very, very bitter. I think that's... Okay. Oh. So we have the story in the Yerushalmi about Rabbi Yochanan eating an olive, and the punchline of that story is that it's a bria. I have the story in the Bavli about Rabbi Yochanan eating an olive, and the punchline is he starts off with a really big olive and then becomes a smaller olive, or it becomes a medium-sized olive, even though the pit was removed. Vahashta. Tosa says in the third wide line, Ihava uvde da hashash shalanu, hainu hahid Yerushalmi, imkein, Cholek al shalanu, velo samchinan alei, midlo shanilei mishum debriyahu. Right, Zok Taisvis, if there is the same story. The Yerushalmi has a story about Rabbi Yochanan eating an olive. The Bavli has a story about Rabbi Yochanan eating an olive. If it's the same story. So the fact that the Bavli does not answer the din of Bria, like the Yerushalmi answers, that would indicate that the Bavli denies the concept of Bria. If it's the same story, so therefore the Bavli disagrees with the Yerushalmi, and the Bavli denies Bria. Now, Tosfos is alluding to the fact that I pass in like the Bavli over the Yerushalmi, because as the Rif writes at the end of Maseches Erevin, the Bavli was authored after the Yerushalmi. No? Rabbi Yochanan is the author of the Yerushalmi. He is like a first generation Amora. The Bavli is not written until the days of Ravina Ravashi. That's like fifth generation, however you count. No? So there's a lot of space between that. So we pass in like the Bavli over the Yerushalmi because Bavli is later. And as a matter of halacha, we pass in like the later opinions when we assume that the later opinion saw the earlier opinion and argued, that shows that the later authority is disagreeing with the earlier authority. If there is no assumption that the later authority saw the positions of the earlier ones, so then we would not pass in like the later opinion, right? Just because I am a later generation than the Rambam does not mean that you should paskin like me against the Rambam. No? Agreed? Right? First of all, I didn't see all the Rambams. Second of all, I didn't see all the sources the Rambam holds. Second of all, you also need like a lot of humility over here. The idea of passing like the Bas or passing like the later opinion is when people are roughly equivalent. There's a certain periodization that poskim use that, like, no one today would argue in the Rambam, correct? Where do you draw the lines? Right? Where do you say, I can't argue on them because they're too far removed? That question of periodization is a very hard question in the study of halacha, and the different periods end in different areas at different times. So in certain communities, they're going to be arguing with those who we consider the Rishonim after, in Spanish communities, they'd be arguing after Ashkenazi communities are no longer arguing. That's the basic idea. But I just went off on a total tangent. Okay, the Hashta. So again, Tosa says, if the story in the Rishami is the same as the story in the Bavli, so there's a disagreement. And we do not rely on the Rishami because the Bavli did not answer. Aval, however, Shema Shnei Maisim Hayu. Maybe there are two different stories. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan ate two olives. Two different stories. Vahid Yerushalmi Hayazai Yishalim. V'achlo Im Hagar In. The Heavy Bria. Tysus is saying that the story in the Yerushalmi is that Rabbi Yochanan ate the olive Im Hagar In. That means, according to our version of the Tysus, Reb Yochanan actually thought an olive was a cherry. And he ate the pit. That's the way it appears to us in Tysus. That means that our Tosis is saying that the concept of Bria means the entity, that organic thing on its own. That's a Bria. Even if there is part of it that is inedible, if you take that inedible part out, it is not a bria. To be a bria, you have to eat it with the garin, with the pit. That's artisis. If you look in the Tosis Harash's presentation of this, the Tosis Harash says a little differently. Tosis Harash says that in the Yerushalmi story, they bring the olive to Rabbi Yochanan with the pit. Then he made a bore pri ha'etz. Then he takes the pit out after he made the bracha. Meaning, the Tosis Harosh's version is that since the appearance of this olive to Rabbi Yochanan, the olive comes to Rabbi Yochanan as a complete thing, so at that moment, we define it as a beria. And even though by the time it's bracha achrona time, he removed the olive, but because he began the eating when the olive was intact, you still can make a bracha achrona. I think about it. When I eat something, I nibble on it. I don't eat the full shear in one time. Because the eating began as a bria, so the way the the way the Tosfos HaRosh's version of our Tosfos is that Reb Yochanan made a bracha achrona because the olive came to him with the pit. So there are two versions of this Tosfos. Our version says he ate the pit. The other version is the olive appeared with the pit. Zoe?
Isn't that analogous to what we do with hamotzi? Like, we make it on the full loaf, but you don't eat the entire loaf each person, but it has to be made on an intact loaf.
Correct. It's a similar type of idea. Again, obviously not exactly the same, but there is something about the way the item comes to you. That's the way the Tosas HaRash presents it. Now, the Rush himself, remember, Tosas HaRash is not the Rush. Tosas HaRash is a version of Tosas that the Rush took with him when he moved from Germany to Spain. So he came carrying some Tosas. Those are called the Tosas HaRash. But the Rush himself has a halachic opinion, which is that an item is called a bria when you eat whatever it is that you could eat, or you eat whatever is normal to eat. There are two slightly different ways of saying it. If I say that it's called a bria when I eat whatever it is that you could eat, so that means if I take the pit out, it still is a bria because you don't eat the pit. But if I say the approach that you eat whatever you could eat, that means that you kind of have to use a scalpel when you get that pit out of the olive. Make sure that you're not removing any flesh. The other version of the Rush is that if you eat whatever is normal to eat, then it is called the bria. Right? So I have four approaches. Our Tosfos says he actually ate the pit. The Tosfos HaRash says it came in front of him with the pit. The Rush, one version of the Rush, is he ate whatever is edible. The other version is he ate whatever is normally eaten. The Magen Avraham, in discussing this version of you ate whatever is normally eaten, so the Magen Avraham says, according to this fourth approach, if you cook a fruit and a tiny bit of it comes off in the cooking process, no? Doesn't some of it like fall off? It would still be a bria. Because you're eating the normal amount that's eaten. But basically, the standard approach in Judaism is not what our Tosfos says. But just wait 1 second. Our Tosfos says that he ate the pit. That is highly unlikely. It's just not a normal thing. People don't eat pits normally. Aval hahidisha shalon lo haya bulgarian chicane. Stam zayis maliach below gar inhu v'lo have a bria v'lo hachi hutzuk latarit the god will have a v'zayis yushalmi katem zayis benoni haya v'rosel hotzi at then toises, right? Important line. V'harotzel hotzi atzma mispeka tzarech sheyochal kezayis afilu bedavar shehu bria. Tosis basically has two opinions, whether the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are disagreeing, meaning there are two opinions as to whether bria is something that will give a bracha achrona. If I have something that's less than a kezayis, but it's a complete entity, it's a bria, do I make a bracha achrona? So it depends. Does the Bavli agree with the Yerushalmi or not agree? Therefore, Tosfos writes that if you want to get out of any suffix, do not eat a bria. That means don't eat one raisin. The Magen Avraham writes, don't eat one pea from inside a pod. Because if you do that, you're getting involved in the suffix brachos. So what you should do is eat enough that you definitely have a kezayis. Then you solve the problem. And then Tosfos continues, and he says that this is true only by bracha achrona, by bracha rishona. We make the bracha on any amount, etc., etc. Pardon me. Tosfos then quotes that although the Gemara has a kal v'chomer, that if I make a bracha after I eat, certainly I should make a bracha before I eat, and ordinarily kal v'chomer be a da'iraisa. After I eat, there is a bracha that's min ha-Torah, that's called benching. If I make a bracha after I eat, there's a Kal Vachomer, right? When I'm full, I thank Hashem. Certainly I should thank Hashem when I'm hungry, when I even desire eating more. Nonetheless, Taisa says, everybody knows that Brecha Rishona is a Din Rabbanan, and the Kal Vachomer isn't a real Kal Vachomer. That's basically the next 15 lines of Tosfos. Okay, so one issue in Tosfos, right? My student, a couple of years ago, I taught in Stern College. So a couple of years ago, they had a panel. They had me on the panel together with Smadar Rosenzweig and Aviva Feiner. And the panel was to discuss Yirat Shamayim. So the question was like, what does it mean to have Yirat Shamayim? So I said, Yirat Shamayim means that I don't eat granola bars, I don't eat one raisin, and I don't have a kezias worth of a drink. And people are like, Schwartz, you're absolutely nuts. What are you talking about? The answer is I'm not crazy, or at least I say I'm not crazy, because Yirat Shamayim means that you avoid sveikos. You don't get involved in these suffix cases. You don't make a, you don't eat a bria. Because you eat a bria, that's a suffix. So you have Yirat Shamayim, don't eat one raisin. That's Yirat Shamayim. Good? It's again, it's a high bar. But that's Yirat Shamayim. Oh. Okay. Let's just go on in the Taisvis. 11 lines on the bottom of Tosis. The middle of the line says, Ula Inyan Shtia. This Tosis is like tucked out of the way in the middle of Masechah Sukkah. It's not really a Sukkah Tosis. It's really a Brachos Tosis. But since we have the story of Reb Tzadok, so that gets me to start talking about how much you have to eat to make a bracha. So therefore, Tosis decides to give us an essay about how much you have to eat to make a bracha achrona. Right? That's basically what this Tosis is about. Well, what about drinking? How much do I have to drink to make a bracha achrona? So Tosis writes, Ula inyan shtia, when it comes to drinking, nire shemivarchim akizayis yayin al hagefen v'al pri hagefen. Taisva says it appears to him that you make a bracha achrona on wine if you have a kezias of wine. Now this should be striking, because ordinarily we assume that the amount you have to drink for a bracha achrona is a revius, no? A kezias, let's say, is one fluid ounce, like a shot glass. I don't know if you know what these things are, a shot glass, like people drink, like right, a little bit of scotch sometimes. So a shot glass is around one fluid ounce. A revius is 2.8 fluid ounces in the Reb Chaim Noah's share of a revius. Taisvis says that he thinks you make a bracha achrona on a kezias of wine. Af al gav the legabe yom hakipurim lo havishir choshev mepachos mimlo lugmav. Even though when it comes to Yom Kippur, it's only a choshev measurement, meaning it's only considered breaking your fast if you have mimlo lugmav, which is one cheekful, like the Gemara has at the end of Yuma. Nonetheless, lo yafinan minei birkas hayayin la'acharov. We don't learn from Yom Kippur anything about the bracha achrona on the wine. Teida, to l'inyan achila habashir b'yom ha-kippurim kikol seves, u'l'inyan bracha michayev la'acharav b'kezayis, da'alocha k'rev meyer k'depricious. We do not learn from the amount that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, to break my fast, I have to eat something called the kol seves. It's like a fat fig, no? When it comes to bracha achrona, you have to eat a kezias of food. So I see that the halacha of Yom HaKippurim is different than the halacha of eating in general. Taisvis writes, there's an opinion that you do not need melolugmav even by Kiddush. Therefore, Tosvis seems to be saying that the bracha achrona on drinks sets in. Now, Tosis is only speaking about wine, but all the poskim assume that he means all drinks. The bracha achrona comes when it is a kezayis. Tosfos then hesitates. He says, maybe you need to drink a kebetza, etc. When all the dust settles on this sugya, Shulchan Aruch and Simin Reish Yod writes that you should not eat a bria because it's a suffek brachos. Make sure you eat a kezayis. And Shulchan Aruch and Simin Reish Yod also writes that there's a suffek by bracha achrona if you make the bracha on a kezayis. Therefore, drink either less than a kezayis or drink a full revius. We're not sure how much the amount of wine that you need to drink, or the amount of any drink that you need to drink for bracha achrona. We're not sure if it's a kezayis or a revius. So therefore, do not drink that amount. So again, people are not always familiar with these halachos, but basically you have to be careful not to drink this small, either drink a tiny amount or drink a large amount. Don't drink between 1 ounce and 3 ounces. Right? That's the basic halacha, the way it appears. Okay. Again, we didn't read the entire Tosfos, but are there any comments? I just want to maybe move on to the next Gemara, because it's an exciting piece, and we'll begin it this week, and then we'll continue next week in Yiddish. Any questions, comments, or observations?
Very fast.
Yes.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz. Very quick question on the Magen Avraham. If you cook something, it's still bria?
The Magen Avraham is saying that according to the Rush's opinion,
okay,
that bria means if you eat whatever is normally eaten. So it can be a bria when you cook it, even though some of it falls off in the process of cooking. That's what the Magen Avraham is saying. He's saying it within the opinion of the Rush, not according to the other opinions. In fact, the Mishnah Brura says that even the Magen Avraham only said this according to the Rush, but since we don't paskin like that Rush, so therefore he did not mention this idea that if you therefore the Mishnah Berurah did not mention this idea that if you cook it and it begins to disintegrate, it still remains a bria, says the Mishnah Berurah in the Shar HaTzion in the bottom, because that halacha in the Magen Avraham is only within the Rush, and we do not paskin like the Rush, we paskin like the other shitos. That's the basic idea.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is what we have with respect to the brachos. Okay. Should we begin the next Mishnah? Zok the Mishnah, right? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Arba Esrei Seudos Chayiv Adam Lecho B'Sukkah, Achas Bayom V'Achas B'Layla. Rabbi Eliezer says that you have to eat 14 meals in the Sukkah. There's 7 days of Sukkot, one meal in the morning, one meal at night. They didn't eat lunch. You have to eat 14 meals in the Sukkah. V'chachamim omrim, ein l'davar kitzba, chut mileila yom tov rishon shochag ovad. The chachamim say that ein l'davar kitzba, it's not a set amount, meaning you do not have to eat at all if you don't want to. The only time you have to eat is the first night of Yom Tov. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to eat 14 meals in the Sukkah. There's an obligation to eat breakfast and dinner in the Sukkah each day of Sukkot. But the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim say there is no obligation to eat in the Sukkah, with the exception of the first night of Sukkot. Zakt Rashi, ein l'davar kitzba. Rashi says, im ratza lehis anos, ein anu zekukim lo. We don't deal with you. If you want to fast, it doesn't bother us. Ala im yochal, lo yochal chutz l'sukkah. But if you eat, you have to eat in the sukkah. So Rashi is saying that if you want to fast, you can fast. What's the problem with this?
You can't fast on
Yom Tov. You can't fast on Yom Tov. Like, how's Rashi saying that if you want to fast, you can fast? Right? It's a very difficult Rashi. So again, it could be that Rashi doesn't literally mean to fast. Rashi means fast in the sense of not eating bread. It's like Woody Allen says, the Jewish definition of swimming is not drowning. The Jewish definition of fasting is not eating bread. Okay, maybe. But you get the impression that may Ikar Hadin, you're allowed to fast on Yom Tov, according to Rashi. And in fact, the Achronim say that there are certain people for whom eating is a very painful experience. It really bothers them when they have to eat. They're really uncomfortable. It gives them tsar. So in those cases, you're allowed to not eat on Yom Tov. The paradigmatic case of this is somebody it's the way the poskim say it is Adam haragol his anos b'chol yom, a person who fasts every day, va'achila hu tsa'ar lo, so pater milachol, a person for whom eating is painful. You don't have to eat, because eating on, let's say, Shabbos is supposed to be oneg, not tsar. I eat on Shabbos, it's supposed to be enjoyable. If my eating is painful, I don't eat. So the simple reading of Rashi is that you're allowed to fast. It could be like the Mishnah Berurah is saying over there in Tafresh Lamites, the idea is I'm allowed to fast, meaning if I'm the type of person for whom eating is creating tsar. Hi, Tova.
According to the Achronim, let's say, like, for some people, eating just causes them tsar. Like, according to the opinion of, Rabbi Yochanan? According to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, then would they still have to eat if it causes you tsar? Oh.
In other words, Rabbi Eliezer says that you have a unquestioned obligation to eat 14 meals on Yom Tov. Even if it causes you tsar, you have to eat. The Chachamim disagree, and they say the first night of Sukkot you have to eat, even if it causes you tsar, you have to eat. The first night of Pesach, I have to eat matzah, even if it causes me tsar, I have to eat. Right? That's the mitzvah min ha-Torah, I got to eat it. Right? Again, I don't think tsar means that I mamish get like terribly ill. Right? Tsar means discomfort. Right? Mm-hmm. I once got in trouble. I gave like a Shabbos Haggadah drasha about eating matzah with celiac disease. And I was using celiac disease interchangeably with being gluten intolerant. They're very different, right? In this, again, they're different in degree, not in kind, as far as I know. Dr. Tanner, you want to correct me on this?
I think they're different in the consequences. Like gluten intolerant, it's just more like a discomfort, but celiac, you can get very sick.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's a difference in degree, but that's very important. In other words, when I say you have to eat matzah on Pesach, even if it's going to make me sick, well, how sick is it going to make me? Right? If I mamish have celiac disease, so then you don't have to eat matzah. There, you don't do a mitzvah if it mamish makes you sick. But if it's uncomfortable, so you mechuyev to do mitzvahs, even if it's uncomfortable. Right? Mm-hmm. I eat maror. It's not comfortable. I don't like the way horseradish tastes. Or whatever. Horseradish is not maror, but you understand the point.
I have one more question also.
Yeah, please.
So according to Rabbi Eliezer, is he including Shal Shudis potentially on like a Chol Moed Shabbos or something?
So we'll talk about that. It's a good ha'ara. Hold that question. Right? And as you're saying that you should end up with the 15. Because you have a Shalosh Shudis, right?
Yeah, if you think that there's a Chiyuv to eat Shalosh Shudis.
I mean, there is a Chiyuv to eat Shalosh Shudis. It's an excellent point. We'll talk about it with Rabbi Eliezer. We'll get there.
Okay.
Now, the paradigmatic case of someone who's allowed to fast on the Shabbos or Yom Tov is what we call Tainus Chalom, no? if a person has a very bad dream and the person is all bent out of shape because of it, well, uncomfortable. So the din is that you're allowed to fast on Shabbos and Yom Tov because eating causes you pain. You're so distraught because of the dream, you can't eat, so you're allowed to fast on Shabbos and Yom Tov. There's a special halacha, Sarech Mameis of Tainis L'Tainisal, right? We punish you because you fasted on Shabbos, right? So therefore, you have to have a fast again to make up for this fast that you had. It's like you pay kefal, right? That's the thing. Okay, so let's go on in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer says that you eat 14 meals in the sukkah. The Chachamim say there's no set amount, with the exception of the first night of Yontif. That's when you have to eat in the sukkah. The rest of the Yontif, you don't. V'od am Rabbi Eliezer. Mishlo achal leila yom tov harishon, yashlim leila yom tov ha'achron shochag. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. If you don't eat 14 meals the first days of Sukkot, you have tashlumen. Eat on Shmini Atzeres, and that will be mashlim your chiyuv of. That will be mashlim your chiyuv of 14 meals in the sukkah, even though you're not eating in the sukkah. Right? Rashi speaks this all out. There's an obligation to eat 14 meals in the sukkah. I missed a meal, so I make it up in Shmini Atzeres. But in Shmini Atzeres, I'm not eating in the sukkah. Again, Shmini Atzeres in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not eating in the sukkah. But still, according to Rabbi Eliezer, somehow that counts. We'll have to discuss it. V'chachomim omrim ein l'davar tashlumin. Chomim say you can't make it up. V'alzeh nemar mu'uvas lo yuchal l'skon. V'chesron lo yuchal l'himanos. This is the pasuk in Koheles, where Koheles says that there are things that are messed up and they can't be repaired. There's something that's missing and it cannot be filled in. Right? Meaning, Chachamim say that there is no tashlumin. If you miss your meal, I'm sorry, you can't make it up. Adkan. Great. Zok the Gemara. My time is Rabbi Eliezer. What's Rabbi Eliezer's reasoning that you have to eat 14 meals in the sukkah? So Gemara says, Teshvu ke'en tediru. The Torah says, Basukos teshvu shiv'as yamim. The Torah's expression of teshvu can mean one or two things. The word yeshiva could mean to sit or can mean to live. Teshvu ke'en tediru is Chazal's way of saying that we are translating the word teshvu as if it means to live. Now, where do I live? I live in my apartment, no? But when am I in my apartment? I'm in my apartment in the morning and at night. Throughout the day, I'm in my office or somewhere else. I'm not in my apartment usually. So that's what Rabbi Eliezer says. Teshu ke'en tediru. Ma dira achas b'yom v'achas b'layla. Afsuka achas b'yom v'achas b'layla. Right? Just like dira means I live in my apartment during the day and at night. So also, suka is achas b'yom v'achas b'layla. Once during the day, once at night. That's how Rabbi Eliezer gets to 14. V'rabbanon, the Chachomim disagree, and they say, Kedira, ma'adira ibay achel, ibay lo achel, afsukanami ibay achel, ibay lo achel. The Chachomim say, yeah, basukot teshvu. My sukkah is my house. But tell me, do I have to eat at home? I don't have to eat. If I don't want to eat, I don't eat. So that's the idea, that Teshu Ke'en Tediru, everybody holds of Teshu Ke'en Tediru. But Rabbi Eliezer is using Teshu Ke'en Tediru to tell me once in the morning, once at night. The Chachamim are using Teshu Ke'en Tediru to tell me you don't have to eat. The Gemara does not do the back and forth, right? How come Rabbi Eliezer does not interpret Ke'en Tediru the way the Chachamim do? Right? Maybe Ke'en Tediru means you don't have to eat. How come the Chacham don't interpret it like Rabbi Eliezer? Right? Sometimes in the sugyas, I need people who like do doctoral dissertations on this. Sometimes the Gemara does the back and forth. How come you don't say like him? How come you don't say like him? And sometimes the Gemara doesn't. I don't know why the Gemara doesn't do it. Honestly, I'm actually troubled. How come, right, there is an achlokes? Everyone is agreeing with what Teshu Ke'en Tediru. Everyone agrees with this drush of Teshu Ke'en Tediru. Right? The question just is, how do I understand Tadzuru? I don't understand what this machlokes is about, why the Chachamim don't agree with Rabbi Eliezer, etc. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ihachi. Tanya, you're trying to say something, yeah?
Yeah, no, with Rabbi Eliezer, he's not talking. When you say you're in your, when we're in our homes in the morning and the evening, lav dafka, we're eating.
Right, but Rabbi Eliezer, I think normal people eat one meal. Normal people eat one meal at breakfast, one meal at dinner. And when you're at the office during the day, you kind of nibble on something you don't really eat, no? I think that's what Rabbi Eliezer says. The Chachamim is saying, yeah, but you don't have to eat if you don't want to. Right? Why does each not hold like the other? I don't know. So the Gemara asks, Yihachi afilu leila yantiv mishain nami. If so, even the first night of yantiv also, you should not have to eat. Amir p'yochne, mishim yahot sadak, nema kant chamish asar, v'nemar chamish asar b'chag hamatzos, Malahalan Laila Mishon Chova Mikan Ve'elech Rishus Afkan Laila Mishon Chova Mikan Ve'elech Rishus Zokt the Gemara that we have this Gezira Shava of Chamish Azar of Chamish Azar Chamish Azar. The festival of Pesach is on the 15th day of Nisan. The festival of Sukkot is on the 15th day of Tishrei. Just like the 15th day of Nisan, right? You have to eat the first night and the rest of the Yontiv. If you want to eat matzah, you can. You don't want to eat matzah, you don't have to. So also the first night of Sukkot, you have to eat the first night. And the rest of the Yontiv, you don't have to. How do you know that the first night of Pesach you have to eat matzah? There's an obligation to eat matzah the first night of Pesach. So this is going to be a really big conversation for next week, God willing. Right? What exactly are the parameters of this equation between the first night of Sukkot and the first night of Pesach? Is anyone in their right mind going to say that you have to eat matzah the first night of Sukkot? That'd be kind of cool. No? Big chumrah, right? Would anyone say that? Right? So next week, I want to flesh out some of the parameters of this issue, and we'll go from here. Okay. Chevra, questions, comments, observations?
I Dr. have a question. Lang.
Okay. That's
one of the
this question, how, comment, observation. You're taking the question option. Good.
How are you? No, that's not really my question. Wouldn't the fact that if the way that Rabbi Eliezer is interpreting to dwell, wouldn't that be problematic if you're having a meal somewhere else? Like, it seems like he's so tying this to Dira. Like, can you go have a meal in another person's home in this interpretation? So
the Gemara in Amid Beis is going to say that according to Rabbi Eliezer, I cannot be Yotze in your sukkah.
Okay.
Right?
Then I leave my question. I table it. When we get to Amid Beis.
That's going
to
be the Gemara on Amid Beis. We'll get there. There's another is we have to deal with Tova's question about Shalosh Shudas. There's a lot to say in the Sugya, but this is why we have more Shirim to give. Okay, Chevra, have a good night.
Refuah Shleima.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good Shabbos.
Shabbos.